He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It is the Thursday, April 23rd edition of the Best Stocks Now with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. And I'm here with Barry Kiter, chartered financial analyst. And after a huge day yesterday, we have just a little bit of a downdraft here today with the Dow down 200 points right now. That's 41 basis points, 49,289. The NASDAQ is down 121, that's a half a percent, to 24,534. The S&P 500, which hit a new all-time high just yesterday, 24 hours ago, maybe 20 hours ago. The S&P 500 is down 15 today right now, and the S&P is at 7,122. Oil continues to be a big factor in the market right now, and we have oil down. No, it's up a little bit. Oil is up about 1% to 93.83. Gold is down just a skosh. Gold has really cooled off. Gold is at 47.45. Silver has really cooled off. It's at $76.11. The 10-year is at 4.29. Still too elevated, but it's come down from 4.50 recently. And the, over at the cryptocurrency markets, those murky markets, it's down 1,531 to 77,541. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And Barry, did we have a day yesterday or what?
Wow, it was I mean, just amazing. It's interesting in terms of being in the right places. You got a ton of alpha yesterday. I saw where the chip sector is on a 16-day run, which I think is at an all-time high. And so, yeah, we just keep watching it and keep smiling, I guess, at this point. Right?
Well, we were up 2.71% yesterday, which was about double what the market was. That's overall with everything we have in the market with our different portfolios.
Including cash, right?
Yes, and our bonds. GEV Vernova was up 13.8% yesterday. That's in our premier growth portfolio. ARM Holdings was up 12% yesterday. In our premier growth portfolio.
That was a timely purchase you made.
Yes, it was. SanDisk was up 8.4% yesterday. Cameco, which owns the old Westinghouse, was up 8.5% yesterday. Micron was up 8.5% yesterday. And then stocks like AMD, Taiwan Semiconductor, Broadcom, Palantir, CoreWeave, MP Materials, U.S. Rare Earth, etc. Huge winners yesterday. One guy, I'm in a chat room on Seeking Alpha every day with my subscribers there. They get the same information that the other subscribers get, obviously. And Web Dude at 8:30 last night said, "Massive alpha." That's his comments to me. I go, well, thank you. That's why they call this site Seeking Alpha. And I see just a ton of bad articles and bad pundits and click jockeys on this site. But I try to be true, honest. I tell it like it is. When I see something as compelling as I did a couple of weeks ago, I bring it to your attention. There's one guy on there. He's one of the top. I don't know. Every time he writes an article, it's always trending right at the top. He's wrong every time. I've never seen anybody as wrong as he is. 5 reasons why this market is going to tank. 6 reasons why we're going into recession. 12 reasons why you shouldn't listen to me anymore. He's just a buffoon. I'm sorry, but when I see a buffoon, And yet people seem to be attracted to that stuff, Barry. It's like the guy that was always writing about the double-digit portfolio, double-digit yields. Yes,
dividends.
Yeah, high-yield investor. He was number one for a long time until people found out that it doesn't work. It's not a good strategy. And then there was a guy that was a REIT. He was going to retire on this REIT and sleep well on this REIT, sleep well at night. They called them swans, sleep well at night. With this REIT. Well, you know, the REITs have got problems. Everywhere I look, there's vacancies in shopping centers. There's anchor tenants that have left. There's office buildings downtown that have, vacancies, big-time vacancies, as people aren't living or aren't working from home anymore, or working at the office much anymore. The REIT sector has performed very poorly. And why, if you're on a site called Seeking Alpha, are you reading all these REIT articles? That's all they know. They have a one-track mind. Oh, this REIT, that REIT. I mean, he must have written 25 articles on the same stock. Guess which one it was. Remember
oh, that? I know which one it is. Yeah, it's give me a minute.
Realty Income.
Yeah, that's it.
And I actually said in several presentations, Realty Income is headquartered in Escondido, California, which was only just inland from where we lived in La Costa, California. And their wholesaler used to come to our office. I wish I would have saved it. I don't know what I did with it. But he gave us all a clock, a wall-mounted clock, that said monthly income on it. And that was kind of the thing that was their little catchphrase. Instead of paying you a quarterly dividend, you got monthly income. And
other one they always write about was Annaly. Remember?
Yeah, they love Annaly.
I think it's NLY.
Agency.
I'm going by my memory, but yeah, I think it's NLY was
because they're 12% dividend yields. Yeah. But you have to look at the total return. Now let's just look at Realty Income over the last 10 years. It's delivered. Counting the dividend yield, it's delivered an annual return of 5.9% per year over the last 10 years. And you might say, well, I'm happy with that. Really? The S&P's returned 24.2% per year. That's a lot of opportunity cost up in smoke. Now, it gets even worse. Over the last 5 years, Realty Income has averaged 3.9%. You can get that in a CD, even maybe more than that right now, at the bank. And you've got risk in a REIT. You have property risk. You have default risk. You have interest rate risk. Even over the last 12 months, you've got the S&P on a tear up 38%. Realty Income's up 15%. Okay? So I don't call that a best stock now. I'm sorry. You may feel safe owning that, but you shouldn't. During the last bear market, 07 through 09, it was down 43%, while the S&P was down 54%. So it is not non-correlated to the market. A REIT does horribly in a bear market and in a recession. That's one of the worst places you can be. It is in some of the illiquid real estate that these REITs own. So I'm just saying, okay? Seeking Alpha has its good points. I love Seeking Alpha for their news. And there's a lot of really good commentators. We wrote an article yesterday that they rejected, Barry. We haven't had one rejected in a long time, but they were not happy with us knocking the coming SpaceX IPO.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
They said, we don't like the fact that you are criticizing the IPO of SpaceX. Well, we weren't criticizing it. We're just presenting a few facts. The company has $18 billion in sales, and they want to go public at $1.8
trillion. Yeah, which is 100 times
you're wrong.
Revenues, right?
1,000.
Yeah, you got to get them zeros, right?
1,000 times sales. That's unheard of. It would take you 1,000 years to recoup your money just in sales. Now, yes, their sales are going to increase over time, but that's the current price-to-sales ratio if you're going on $18 billion. And their revenue comes from Starlink, which is a commodity. I mean, internet access and internet service is a commodity. And their whole thesis is built on building data centers in space, which is an experiment that Musk is going to use your money and investors' money to see if it's viable or not. It has not been proven that you can launch these massive data centers into space, get unlimited power from the sun, cooling from the atmosphere, and beam it all down to Earth. That is the main business model of SpaceX. And I've always said that the little guy is the liquidity, providing liquidity for the people that were in a long time ago and now need someone to buy their stock. That's my opinion of SpaceX. And Seeking Alpha turned down our article and would not print it. Oh, well. We'll be right back.
I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Barry, we're going to have to get another receptionist to answer the phones. I mean, our phone has been ringing off the hook. And I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. How many appointments did you have yesterday?
Yeah, seven.
Seven? Is that all? Come on. There's 8 hours in a day.
And a radio show, so don't forget the show. That's
another
hour.
You didn't take a lunch break, did you, yesterday? You can't have that.
Yeah,
how many appointments do you have today?
Seven again. So we already got one in.
Number.
Already got one in this morning before the show. So
that's
we're moving quick,
okay.
Over here. We got one speed.
We got a box of seeds. No, I'm just kidding. For the next seven people that call up and make an appointment. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Keep this guy busy. I have my mission in life is to sit here in the quiet of my office. In a very peaceful, serene setting on a beautiful river with a pristine background. No houses in the background, just pine trees and oak trees across the river. And focus and stay focused. Close my doors off to the noise of the world. And pull up every morning the stocks that meet my criteria into my charts. And peruse those charts on a daily basis and make decisions. Most of the time, nothing. Yesterday, did nothing. Several days, most days, a lot of days, no buys, no sells. Now, most of the sells come from stuff that people transfer to us. The AT&Ts and the REITs and the other major soggy stocks that I see come across my desk. There's where most of my sells come from. But I also look at every one of our holdings on a daily basis. And I think a lot of people got to wonder, and if you do wonder, you should wonder, if anybody's really managing your account wherever it is now. I was on the 19th floor of the AT&T building downtown San Diego, right at Front and Broadway. I mean, I was ground zero. And on my floor, I had a pretty large space. Morgan Stanley had a huge space. And, they must have had 30 or 40 cubicles, private offices. It was lucky if you saw two or three people in there. On a day, I'm just telling you, especially when I got to my office at 6:30 a.m., the only people were in the MS office were the help, the janitor, and maybe a few of the women that getting ready for, whatever. But I'm just telling you, that's what I witnessed every single day on the 19th floor at Front Street Broadway. It's a beautiful place to work. We had a beautiful conference room that looked clear to Mexico. And now Mexico's come clear to San Diego for the most part. It's just like,
yeah, it got closer.
There was
right?
there was no border for a long, long time, and it created total chaos and havoc. The schools couldn't handle it. The hospitals couldn't handle it. The emergency rooms couldn't handle it. The welfare folks couldn't handle it. It created absolute chaos in a border city like San Diego. And it's not the city that I grew up in, which was it was a sleepy Navy town for the most part when I was growing up. Mission Bay had just been put in there for water skiing. Before that, it was kind of a slough and wetlands. SeaWorld was there. The world-famous San Diego Zoo was there when we moved there. There were no San Diego Padres. The San Diego Chargers were in the old AFL, Barry. You're too young to remember. At one time, there were two football leagues, the AFL, the American Football League, and the NFL, and the National Football League.
Yeah, pre-Super Bowl, right?
Well, yes, and then at some point, before they merged, the Super Bowl was literally the champion of the AFL versus the champion of the NFL.
Yeah.
And those first three Super Bowls, it was Green Bay versus Oakland. It was Green Bay
Chiefs.
Chiefs were in the first two. Yeah. And then along came my favorite player of all time, Broadway Joe Willie Namath from the University of Alabama, the consummate playboy. I mean, the ladies' man who could throw a ball like I never saw anybody. He could thread the needle, as they said back in the day. And he was brash. He was almost the Muhammad Ali, the mouth from the South, in football. He was the quarterback of the New York Jets.
Yeah, and it's what, the third Super Bowl? That's the one he said basically guaranteed a win, right?
I guarantee a win because the AFL had never won. The NFL was dominating with Green Bay and the Vince Lombardi guys from, the cold tundra of Wisconsin. And Joe Willie had a couple of running backs. I have a photographic memory. He had Emerson Boozer and he had Matt Snell. And he had a plethora of wide receivers that he could thread the needle. I mean, thread the needle. And pass that ball down the field. And they went up against the mighty Baltimore Colts. Let's see, where are the Colts now? I want to
see. Yeah, well, now they're in Indianapolis.
Browns.
Yeah.
Oh, no, okay, they're Indianapolis.
Yeah, they were on the NFC side then, and now, of course, they're on the AFC side. But yeah.
Yeah. And Johnny Unitas with the high-top shoes was the quarterback. And the Colts were heavy favorites. And Joe Willie Namath. I grew up with a poster of him in my room, an autographed poster of Joe Willie Namath. He was my hero. With the bangs or the long hair out the back of his
fur coat.
Helmet. The white shoes, the flash, the pizzazz. When he came to town, it was like, here's a movie star that can also throw a football like no other. And I saw some amazing football in those days. The AFL was much more known for throwing the ball down the field.
Yeah, now didn't you end up getting either Unitas or Namath or both at the Chargers?
Unitas came to us in the very later years of his career. He had a crew cut. He always had a crew cut. I'll tell you who else came to us in the later years of his career was Jim Harbaugh as a quarterback.
Yep, that's right.
And now he's a great football coach. So we saw some great ones, but there was none better than Don Coryell, who was the magician of the West Coast offense, throwing the ball down the field with Dan Fouts as the quarterback, Chuck Muncy as the running back, great receivers like J.J. Jefferson and Kellen Winslow. I will never forget some of those games. And I followed Don Coryell at San Diego State, where he put three quarterbacks in the NFL in consecutive years. Dennis Shaw was probably the best there in Buffalo. And then there was another one in Cleveland, Brian Sipe. That was excellent because they went through the Coryell system. And a lot of these offenses that you see today, we'll get to football. We'll get to the stock market in the second half of this show. But these are great memories. They really are. The AFL versus the NFL. How about O.J. Simpson playing for the Buffalo Bills back in those days? The great O.J. The late O.J. We'll be right back. Just don't understand anymore. The top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of the Best Stocks, Best Football Quarterbacks of All Time show. We go from Broadway Joe Namath, to initial jobless claims, Barry.
Not quite. We skipped my hero growing up, Dan Marino. Never won a Super Bowl, but had some records.
Well, we had some mega battles with Dan Marino.
Oh yeah,
the greatest football game of all time was the Chargers versus the Dolphins when Don Shula was the coach in Miami. It was hot. It was humid. It went to 2 overtimes. The Chargers ended up winning like 38-35. I watched it at a friend's house. I'll never forget that game as long as I live. It was the most incredible game I ever saw in my entire life. Now, I've never seen a big cold bucket of Gatorade thrown on the initial jobless claims guy, right? But he did report in today that we're at 214,000 initial jobless claims. And I would say it was two weeks ago that I saw an article on Seeking Alpha. It was trending, number one. He says, here's the indicator I rely on to indicate a recession. Remember when I talked about that?
Oh, yeah.
Right now it's flashing red. This reliable indicator is flashing red. And I go, what a dope. That's all I can say. What a dope. Do you look at earnings, pal? Do you look at the initial jobless claims? Do you look at the charts of the market? Are you trying to get clicks? What do you get? A penny a click or 10? I don't know what it is. 10 cents a click or something. And I think a lot of these. And then you look at what the guy's credentials are. He does this. He's got a job and he's making a little extra money in the evenings writing articles like this to get clicks. I'm just telling you the real world is like out there on Seeking Alpha, which I love Seeking Alpha, but there's a lot of crap out there.
And still tame. Those numbers are tame. It's
very tame.
Jobless claims you're about to get into. Yeah, let's hear them.
Now, that's the most reliable indicator I've ever seen of a coming recession.
Well, it's high-frequency data, right?
Yes. I mean, we get 214,000.
Yeah, we get it every week. So
we get it every Thursday. That's the most reliable indicator I've seen. When that starts ticking up to 300, 350, we're in trouble. Okay, and then here's another big warning coming from the International Energy Agency chief, who also is very much of a drama king. The world faces the biggest energy security threat in history, IEA chief says. Well, maybe that's because you were all for wind and solar. And now all of a sudden you find out that that's not the path to go. You know, this guy's pretty much an idiot himself, in my opinion, Fatih Birol. He says the current crisis has resulted in the loss of 13 million barrels of oil per day. Oh, I thought we didn't need oil. I thought we could go to all, the wind and the sun. And we're finding the biggest energy, facing the biggest security threat in history, Birol said in an interview with CNBC. Another financial media that I don't have a lot of trust and faith in. I hear a lot of crap there too.
You watch it on mute more than
I don't.
You watch
I don't
it on,
listen, and I don't. I don't even watch it anymore. I can't stand to watch it. Those same people every day. Oh, what about the small caps here? Blah, blah, blah. The situation continues to deteriorate. He says, blah 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 blah. Well, then why weren't you more pro? There's plenty of oil out there in the world. But you listen to the little girl from Sweden, and now you, there's what caused the crisis. You let Merkel sign a deal with Putin. You let Russia put in a gas line to Europe. Those were all stupid decisions. You stopped down drilling in the North Sea and off the coast of the British Isles.
Shut down all their coal-powered power plants, right?
No wonder you've got an energy crisis. But, hey, you know, you judge for yourself. Markets, and then here's another guy. Markets are in denial. This is another CNBC interview. In denial. They're just in denial. They're going up. They're in denial. That's denial. As energy crisis risk a hard stop to the global economy. This guy, David Roche from Quantum Strategy, says the global markets are dangerously over-optimistic. We don't want to have that. About the energy crisis unfolding in the Middle East, and the world economy faces a hard stop. There was a movie one time where the world stopped. You ought to watch that. It's pretty cool. Everybody was frozen, except for a few people. Right. So they would walk into a restaurant and eat the food off of people's plates that they had ordered. And it was really quite interesting. The whole world, well, the day the world stood still, I believe it was. This guy is basically predicting that. He says there are virtually no tankers leaving the Gulf. There are no tankers leaving the Red Sea. Now, he's not mentioning earnings here at all. He's only mentioning tankers. The markets are believing in the cloud cuckoo land story that Trump will up stumps and go home. You know, and that's another thing. I get emails from people going, I just can't believe this market's going up with that idiot in office and blah, 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 blah. Who, do you care who's in office? The market did well with Biden. Don't let your bias cost you money. That's stupidity. And I think there was a Biden derangement syndrome. There's a Trump derangement syndrome. And it could be very, very costly. Oklo and NVIDIA to partner in supporting nuclear-powered AI factories. Now, there's your answer. It's not wind and solar, although it has its place. It has. I run my office on solar every day. Pretty good. I've got my solar panels parked on my balcony. They're in the sun all day. And I love to see my my batteries full every day and running my little office. I couldn't run a data center off of it. But I could run my little office, which only has a couple computers and a couple of lamps to power. But hey, who's counting? But I think there's a huge future for this. And I think Oklo is a major player. The problem is, it's nowhere close to being real, to plugging in. But it will happen, just like ChatGPT happened one day. You remember where we were when ChatGPT happened? And all of a sudden, AI was available to the little guy, the general public. And now you've got several choices for your artificial intelligence, along with your human intelligence, by the way. And Oklo, major player. But like I say, it's down the road before they actually... When will that happen, Barry, that an extension cord comes from a small modular reactor, and the lights go on, and the whole data center comes alive.
Just carry it around with you, right? It's like, tailgates at football games. Since we're on that, I mean, it's going to power the whole
stadium. The lights go on and everything from a small modular reactor. And according to my guys in my church that are in the nuclear program, the A program over here that the Navy offers. It's a hot rock in water, and it keeps the water boiling eternally, practically, and it powers the reactors. Okay,
the steam. Yeah.
That's it. Avis, have you been watching this meme stock? This is craziness. This is the new... How is Avis rent-a-car? It goes to $1,000 a share. Like 2 days ago, because somebody, it was Burry. It was Michael Burry, who, I don't know about that guy. It got to $8.50. In 2 days, it's gone from $8.50 to $2.75. What? It's lost $600 a share in 2 days. First, you had the big short. squeeze that took it up to 850. So this is another GameStop story. And it turns into a meme stock. I don't know how much debt Avis has. They've almost gone bankrupt a few times. And it goes up to a market cap of $60 billion. That's unheard of. That's ridiculous. And now it's clear back to $15 billion. It's down $45 billion in 2 days. You want to play the meme stocks, do you? Okay, well, good luck. Okay, let's take it. So we do have some earnings, too, here today to talk about, which are a little bit more, that's a little bit more meat on the bone than Avis Rent-A-Car. And we'll get to some of those when we come back here in the second half. In fact, one of our stocks has reported here this morning. We were up this morning when the market was down. We had some decent performers, mostly in the nuke sector. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. And I think the stock I want to look at is, which one do you think it is that reported last night after the close? Obviously, Tesla, TSLA, which has a car problem. And we've been saying that for quite some time. It has a car problem. The stock is in a number 4 downtrend. You can't call that chart anything else. It's in a number 4 downtrend. It's down $13 a share today, or 3.5%. Their sales were actually not bad. I mean, their sales were up 16% year over year. Their earnings were up 52% year over year, but their margins suck. They made 41 cents per share, 41 cents per share. And I'm sure there was a little bit of financial engineering, Barry, to come up with 41 cents per share. Let's just compare 41 cents per share. Micron's going to make $95 per share next year. SanDisk is going to make $111 per share next year. Tesla is expected to make, for the full year, they're expected to make $2.48. But for the quarter, they made 41 cents. And, nothing really good came from the report that I could see. And the fact of the matter is EV sales are not what they used to be. The glitter, I guess, has worn off. EV sales are plummeting, and they're especially plummeting in China, his EV sales, and his EV sales are plummeting in Europe, because he became all of a sudden very unpopular with the Europeans, and a lot of people, his followers, his avid followers, his disciples here in America, when he went on the Doge rampage with Donald Trump. And now all of a sudden you had Musk derangement syndrome. I had many people telling me, can you believe that, Musk? I even have a nephew that lost his job because he worked for AID. What was it, World AID? Is that it?
Essentially the one they cut the funding on because it was the money was going to other things.
Well, and and he lost his job, and obviously not a fan of Trump or World Aid or Elon Musk. So there you go, Tesla. We figured it was a hold at best. That's the last article we wrote about it, and you know, you've got all these people that think it's still the cat's meow, including a friend down south in St. Petersburg, Florida. Kathy Wood thinks it's the cat's meow. Last time I knew, she had a $2,500 target price on it, and it was her largest holding. She drives a Tesla proudly. And now the stock is $374. Do you think it's going to get to $2,500 in our lifetime? I don't think so. It's headed in the wrong direction. It got as high as $500 a share. That was during the big run in the market during the last couple of months last year, and then all of a sudden the tariff war started. I Musk was pretty popular. The stock was hitting new highs while he was on his Doge kick. And then things started to fall apart, and the stock has gone from $500 a share to $374. That's a 26% drop. The stock's probably down about 15% so far this year, something like that. It's not a winner anymore. Sorry. They're going to maybe grow their earnings 16% this year, maybe. Last year, their earnings were down 31%. The year before that, they were down 22%, and their earnings were down 23% the year before that. It's an automobile stock, and a waning one at that. And he hopes to make it, an Optimus robot? Is that the name of the robots that are going to take over the world at some point in time?
And yeah.
We drove by the Tesla factory where they're building the robots.
We met somebody who works there, remember? We
met somebody that works there. I couldn't tell because he had real mechanical moves. Was I being faked out by AI in a robot, or was he a real person? That's where we're getting to in this society of ours. I think he was real. But it's just, I don't know that that's the end all. He says everybody's going to want a robot in their house. Well, depends. Can they cook? Can they vacuum? Can they pay like the bills?
Like the Jetsons over here.
Yeah. Right. We'll see. Okay, so that was Tesla's earnings.
Even the Jetson robot went haywire every once in a while.
Yeah, right? He would go off berserk.
Yeah.
Burn the crab cakes. Well, let's take a look here. We got one other story that I wanted to mention here. Before we got to go, and that story is, let's see. None of our stocks actually have reported today. Well, ServiceNow reported. That's a disaster.
That's a total disaster.
Yeah. That was one of the biggest winners we ever found. We deserted it a long, long time ago. I've had it transfer in recently from other accounts. The first thing I do is sell it. It and Salesforce and Workday and other software stocks, Adobe, wow, what a horrible sector that has become. And they are on the other side of the street as it relates to AI. Because AI supposedly is supplanting and replacing a lot of the software because people can use AI instead of the software that they used to subscribe to. They can subscribe to AI for a small price and save a lot of money. And on the losing end of this is ServiceNow, Salesforce, and Adobe, and what's the Autodesk? Autodesk is another one. I could go on and on with software.
Yeah, CRM.
TurboTax.
Been hit hard. Yeah, Intuit. Yeah,
Intuit. You can do your taxes now, I'm sure, on AI. All right, well, we're out of time. Minnesota is out there. Hey, we got to nail that down today. Would you do that, Barry?
Yeah, I'll reach out to EDC, see what the city is.
That's coming up really, really quick, but we do have the dates.
And, 18th, 19th, and 20th. That'll be a Tuesday, Wednesday, and a Thursday. I think you said you're probably doing the workshop on that Tuesday.
Three days of appointments, and I know she said we're going to need another day.
Oh, so. Yeah.
855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. The Gunderson team coming to town. Or GundersonCapital.com for a free 4-week trial of the newsletter, the app, live trades. Have a great day, everybody.
The This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.